Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, the book Subway, Bruce Davidson's classic collection of New York City photography, is being re-released this fall by Aperture Books. Maybe you know it. Bruce will join me to talk about his photographs of the subway on October 18th. But in advance of that, he and I together want you to submit your best subway photo. Head underground or to an elevated track and snap a picture. Then submit it right on our website. Bruce Davidson will take a look at your submissions and will feature some of our favorites online and on the air on that day. The deadline for submission is midnight, Sunday, October 16th. So find out more about submitting your subway photo at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll put your photos on our website for the world to see. Well, from World War I until the 1970s, almost 6 million African Americans were involved in one of the biggest population shifts in history, the Great Migration, away from the American South to points north, east, and west. Isabel Wilkerson is a child of that migration, and her book about it, The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration, was published last year to great acclaim. Isabel Wilkerson was a reporter with the New York Times, where she won the Pulitzer Prize for feature writing, becoming the first African-American woman to win the prize and the first African-American to win for individual reporting. The book is now available in paperback, and she joins me today to talk about this history and to hear your story. So, Isabel Wilkerson, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here.
And again, listeners, we're inviting your great migration stories. Did you or your parents or your grandparents or great-great-grandparents move here from the South? What were the circumstances? How has this story of your family been passed down to you? And tell us if you're thinking of moving back South now, which seems to be the current trend, at least among some people. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Isabel, do you want to start with a little of your own family's story?
Yes, I actually am the product of two people who never would have met had there been no Great Migration, which is in some ways a classically American story, because how many of us know or are descended from someone, a great-grandmother from Ireland who met someone from Germany and started a whole new lineages here. So my mother was from Georgia and my father from Virginia. They met in Washington, D.C. And had they not done that, I wouldn't have existed. And I grew up in a community where everybody was from the predictable states that led to the migration to that particular city.
And were you told the story of why here and why leave there?
That is why I consider this to be one of the great underreported stories of the 20th century. And that's because these people did not talk about it. You have 6 million people who essentially defected a caste system that was in place in the region of their birth. They left from World War I until the 1970s. They were in some ways seeking political asylum within the borders of their own country, and they did not tell their own children and grandchildren about it. I had no idea what they'd gone through or why they'd left. I knew where they'd come from and when, but beyond that, I didn't know.
I think this goes on in immigrant group after immigrant group, however you want to define immigrant. You know, my grandmother who came from Poland after World War One, I'd say, tell me about the old country. And she'd go, ah! And that's all she wanted to say about it. You will be speaking at the Lower East Side Tenement Museum tonight at 6:30. Listeners, if you're interested, you can RSVP on their website. We have a link on our show page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And it's significant because while we associate that museum with the European immigrants who crowded into the Lower East Side of Manhattan in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, like my grandmother, you view these stories as very similar. and you identify with the other children of immigrants in your grade school.
I absolutely did. In fact, that was the inspiration for making the connection between the immigrant experience and that of African Americans who were all pouring into the same cities at around the same time that other immigrants were coming in from Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, and from parts of Asia and other parts of the world, and all doing some of the same things. These were in some ways the same people, people of the land, who were seeking warmer suns, you might say, in the big cities of America. And when they arrived, they kind of were coming for the same reasons ultimately. And I think we have so much more in common than we've been led to believe. And that's what I learned growing up, actually.
Wendy in Springfield, you're on WNYC with Isabel Wilkerson. Hi.
Hi, I'm very glad to be here. My mother, Josephine Jones, came from Greenville, South Carolina, and ended up in New York in 1946. She wanted to get a better life. She had graduated from high school in 43, and she didn't want to just, you know, take care of people's children and cook in people's homes. But she came to cook in someone's home because that's what she could do. She ended up as the first black woman in management at a Fortune 500 company, and I'm writing a story about her life now.
Fabulous.
Oh, that's great. One of the things...
Go ahead.
One of the things I'd say about it is that your mother took the exact trajectory that one would expect from the part of the South that she was from. This wasn't a haphazard unfurling of lost souls. Like any migration experience, people went to the closest or most direct route to what they perceived as freedom. And so people came from Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia to get to New York and Philadelphia and Boston. And she followed that route. And that's a beautiful thing.
Wendy, go ahead.
Well, I loved your book, and our book club is reading it at the library, and I read it as soon as it came out last year in hardcover.
Thank you so much. Angela in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. This is my first time calling. I've been listening to you for 10 years. Thank you so much
Thank
for a
you
great
so
show.
Much.
I'm actually calling from my school where my kids are going to be back from gym any second now. But I taught about the Great Migration in my school here in Lower Manhattan for a couple of years and created a curriculum where I could teach about this really important part of American history. And I was so thrilled last year to see this book come out. It's a book I wish I had written, but I'm so glad that you did. And I read it and I loved it. My father was born in Alabama, and he left Livingston, Alabama in 1967, right after high school, and came to Cleveland, Ohio, and got in the Job Corps program. And through that, he was able to get a job in a restaurant where he met my mother, whose parents, my mother was actually born in Cleveland, Ohio. They are in their early 60s, but she is the product of parents who had come up to Cleveland from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and from Augusta, Georgia. So and I learned in your book, I hadn't really thought about my father having been a part of the migration because in my mind and in the curriculum that I taught, I focused on the World War I period. So I really was grateful that you helped me to see that my own parents were really a part of it as well.
Well, thank you so much. What you described, too, gets to the middle migration stream, which was from Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas to Cleveland and Chicago and Detroit and the entire Midwest. And so you've beautifully captured that. It's within your entire lineage. And also you're one of these people who would not have existed. The majority of African Americans that you might meet in the North, the Midwest, and West, first of all, many of them would not have existed because their parents wouldn't have met. But they are the products and the descendants of this migration.
Angela, I'm sorry it took you 10 years to call in. Don't make it your last, okay?
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Isabel Wilkerson, author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. And in the book, you tell a little of your mother's story and of the questions you had about it. And I guess you're going to read from that, right?
Yes. These are questions that haunted me and drew me to want to write this book. Why did they go? What were they looking for? How did they get the courage to leave all they ever knew for a place that they'd never seen, the will to be more than the South said they had a right to be? Was it a braver thing to stay, or was it a braver thing to go? What would have happened had she not gone north and met and married the Tuskegee Airman from Virginia, a migrant himself who would become my father? Would I and millions of other people born in the North and West have even existed? What would have happened had all those people raised under Jim Crow not spilled out of the South looking for something better? If they had not gone north, what would New York look like? What would Philadelphia, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, and Oakland look like? What, for that matter, would the South look like? Would it have changed on its own? Or did the Black Exodus force the South to face itself in ways no one could ever have thought possible?
What about that last question? Could it have?
I think that ultimately it would have, because the idea of maintaining an artificial hierarchy has existed in the South for so long, in which it was actually against the law for a Black person and a white person to play checkers together, for example, or they couldn't even touch the same Bible.
And it did ultimately have to confront Jim Crow.
It would have to ultimately.
Despite the Great Migration.
It would have had to have happened, but the loss of so many people, 6 million people in a region where at the beginning of it there were only 10 million African Americans in the entire United States, 90% of them in the South, meant that they were losing by large numbers the lifeblood of their workforce.
Here's a little pushback from somebody on our website who asks, every time they discuss this book, it is as a positive. It can be argued that the move to the North weakened the Black American family. Is the creation of an underclass in New York City, Chicago, or Newark a positive thing?
I think that any decision by an individual to make what they feel is the best choice for their family to leave, as with any immigrant group, is always something that they should have the right to do. I believe in the ability to make that individual decision for oneself. However, a lot of the things that the people experienced when they got to the North were the result not of their arrival, but the reaction to their arrival. They arrived in cities that really needed the labor, but were not so certain about the workers themselves. And what do you do when you need the labor, but you're not certain about what to do with the workers themselves? And what they ended up doing was they created restrictive covenants. There were limits as to where they could live. Many of the parents ended up having to work multiple jobs. They weren't able to watch their children in the same way. And so life in the cities can be hard, and there are casualties in such a case.
Jack in North Brunswick, you're on WNYC with Isabel Wilkerson. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. Great topic. I'll have to find my book. My great-grandfather, Reverend Love, moved up from Waynesville, North Carolina. Actually, he came via Lincoln University and then came up to Montclair, New Jersey, and to Hackensack, bought property in both, had churches in both. But he also brought with him lots of workmen out of Waynesville to build the kit homes, to put in the plumbing, to do the plastering. His son, my father, grew up in Charlottesville and then came up to Lincoln, same alma mater, where he met my mother.
Again, that's a reminder of the beautiful predictability in some ways of how people made their decisions to go. I mean, I think that it was no accident that he chose to leave North Carolina to come to New Jersey. And the fact that he met your mother, great opportunities abound when you make that great leap of faith.
Jack, any discussion in your circles or people you know actually doing it, moving back?
Well, at the end of Reverend Love's life, he himself moved back, and his second wife moved back to North Carolina. She died there. We'll be having a family reunion in the Waynesville area just to see the plantation, or what we presume was the plantation where they were his parents would have been raised.
And what's the meaning of the moving back? Is it just that there, you know, maybe is more economic opportunity there now, just like there was here then, or is it more cultural or even spiritual than that?
Well, for him, it was, you know, he had retired, he was done, he was emeritus, he didn't have to compete in an economic sphere anymore, so he could go back to a place where he felt he had more family connection.
Thank you very much. What do you think about the reverse migration?
Well, I like to refer to it as a return migration. If you think about putting your car in reverse, it means you're going backward. And I'd like to think that every migration is a moving forward somehow, certainly in the hearts of the people who make that decision. I think that in some ways, it's a legacy of the Great Migration to begin with. These people who ultimately left in large numbers, and often many of them did not really truly want to leave, they felt that they had to, these parents and grandparents of the modern day people who are returning, they actually helped make the South a place that's more welcoming now. They didn't benefit from it, but it was their departure that helped put so much pressure on North and South to address the issues that had been fueling the migration to begin with. Now it's a more open place, and the people who are returning are in many ways acting as other Americans who want to live in a place that's lower cost of living, where they have more space and land to raise their children. But also there's a spiritual connection because it's a way of connecting with a home land that you really didn't know. Remember, people didn't talk about it. So this generation of people have a lot of questions about how and why the families ended up where they did, and why certain cultural rituals are practiced, and connecting with cousins and others.
You know, everybody's talking about the passing of Steve Jobs today, but there are also at least two other deaths worth noting: the civil rights activist Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, and Derrick Bell, who's been on the show, who fought racism in and out of the Justice Department and academia, and kind of took the stance that even after the Great Migration, even after the civil rights laws, there was a very strong persistence of racism and that things really weren't getting better. You know, in a way, they're one era followed by another era kind of thinkers. Have you had connection professionally or whatever with either of them, or thinking about their legacy in relation to your book today?
I remember having interviewed Derrick Bell as a journalist, as a national correspondent for The Times, but I'm struck by how you bring those two people together in this discussion, because in some ways one of the missing pieces when we talk about American history is sometimes those unsung, lesser-known heroes or lesser-known figures kind of get lost in the discussion, and Fred Shuttlesworth and in particular is one of those people who made great strides toward what we now view as the civil rights legislation, and is one of the lesser-known lights in that era. And in some ways, as with the idea of the kind of work that I do, I think there's so much to be learned and such inspiration from the lesser-known people who take a stand and help make a change, which is what the people in this book, the people in this Great Migration. One single decision by an individual multiplied by millions could help change so much, change American culture, create whole new art forms like Motown and jazz, and even hip-hop even to this day. And so it has a tremendous impact what one decision can be and what one individual can do.
Isabel Wilkerson, The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration, her book now out in paperback. Melba in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I stopped on Route 80.
Whoops. Oh, no. Your cell phone dropped out. Oh, and I think she pulled over on Route 80 just to make this call. Melba, if you call us right back in the next minute or two, I think we'll be able to still squeeze you in. Sheila in the West Village, you're on WNYC.
Hello, and I'm so glad to be able to talk to you, Ms. Wilkerson, because your book changed my life. I'm not black. I'm white. I've known many wonderful black people, very, you know, actors, painters, writers, and I also have taught in the public school system in New York City and have had many black and many multicolored children. And I wish I had read this book 40 years ago, because I had no idea. I just didn't get it. I had no idea what the American blacks have gone through. It just... I mean, I read a little bit of this and that, and I walked in the civil rights marches and stuff, but I had no idea. And I just think this book is terribly important and life-changing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And Melba did call back. Hi, Melba, you're back on the air.
Thank you. I'm going to make this quick because I don't know if it's my phone or what. I just wanted to congratulate Isabel Wilkerson on this unbelievably a wonderful book. It has been just a truly moving experience. I'm a journalist, and I appreciate her way of bringing together so much of the research that she and others have done, and her telling the story through these three fabulous people. But when I got to page 11 of the book, The Warmth of Other Suns, I gasped, because she tells the story of a young girl living in Rome, Georgia. I'm 73 years old, and that happens to be where I was born, in Rome. So I was thrilled, and every time I saw a mention of Rome throughout the book, my heart skipped a beat. I was just in Rome, in northeastern Georgia, in southern Georgia, 3 weeks ago, and I was born in Rome. My family, my mother and father, then after about a year after I was born, moved to Cleveland, Ohio, where my sister was born. And it's so interesting, one of the points that Isabel Wilkerson makes is these strands, these threads of how people wound up in certain places, which I found absolutely fascinating.
And we're almost out of time. Did you tell our screener that Your parents didn't want to talk about it either? The migration itself was a taboo subject?
What I want to say about the migration is that my family was like many others that Isabel Wilkerson has pointed to, who didn't really talk about the conditions and why they left the South. They didn't talk about it, though their whole family, through different stages, moved up to the North and the Northeast. So my story is really part of that, the silence that surrounded a lot of the migration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Rome is in the book because that's where my mother's from, and she actually was one of the toughest interviews I ever had in the course of working on it, because she was one of those people that said, oh, that's in the past. Why do you want to dredge that up? And I read every word of the book to her, and ultimately that's what helped to open her up.
We have 15 seconds. You get the title of your book from Richard Wright.
The title of the book is from Richard Wright, and if you'd like, I can read the epigraph, which is short. And
if it's under 20 seconds.
I was leaving the South to fling myself in the unknown. I was taking a part of the South to transplant an alien soil, to see if it could grow differently, if it could drink of new and cool rains, bend in strange winds, respond to the warmth of other suns, and perhaps to bloom.
Isabel Wilkerson's The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration, now out in paperback. Thank you so much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.